from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Super Bowl 47 is in the history books, and while the San Francisco 49ers fell just short, their furious second-half surge after falling behind 22 points gave Niners fans plenty to cheer about. In the first half of the hour, we'll be joined by sports writers Glenn Dickey and Mark Purdy to talk about the game's highs and lows and whether the best team won. Then the state Supreme Court takes up medical marijuana again, and a case being heard by the justices tomorrow could settle the question of whether local governments can ban cannabis dispensaries. We'll get started with Forum right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. Well, this isn't the show that we here in the Bay Area hoped we would have after Super Bowl 47, but what can you say? The 49ers got into a 22-point hole and never fully climbed out of it, but they sure did get close. The game might most be remembered for that bizarre power outage that left both teams cooling their heels for 34 minutes, but it did turn out to be a momentum changer for San Francisco. They totally outplayed the Baltimore Ravens in the second half, but in the end, they lost 34-31. And for the first half of this hour, we're talking about the game's highlights, what made the difference, and where it all leaves the 49ers and their young quarterback, Colin Kaepernick. Joining me from New Orleans this morning, Mark Purdy, sports columnist with the San Jose Mercury News and the Bay Area News Group. Mark, good to have you with us this morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, veteran sports columnist Glenn Dickey, who writes now for the San Francisco Examiner. Glenn Dickey, good to have you as well.
Yeah, good to be with you.
Yeah, sorry about the circumstances. But Mark Purdy, let me begin with you. The headline on your column this morning, and I know you probably didn't write it, but it says, 49ers say the best team lost. How do you see it?
Well, I think the 49ers probably did have better players, and I think they probably were the better team. But as I wrote, you know, the better team wasn't always win. It's the team that plays better, and the Ravens did play better. And I understand why the 49ers think they were the better team, but they also should know why they lost, and that was just a very, very awful first half. They lined up in the wrong formation on the first play of the game. They had a bunch of stupid penalties that told me kind of they weren't ready to play the game, or at least, or maybe the whole thing overwhelmed them for a while. I don't know, but once they caught their breath there, thanks to the power outage or halftime or whatever, you know, they started playing the way we've seen them play this year.
It was reminiscent to
us. You have to play two halves, not one.
Exactly. It was reminiscent in a way of that Atlanta game where they spotted Atlanta 17 points and then came roaring back. To what extent do you think it can be chalked up, at least to a certain extent, to the inexperience of their quarterback, Colin Kaepernick?
You know, he made a couple of three bad throws, but it wasn't his fault they lined up in a wrong formation, and it wasn't his fault there were a couple other – the defense had some stupid penalties. The defense had three penalties on third downs, which gave Baltimore, you know, extra chances on third down, which you can't do. That wasn't Kaepernick's fault. I think that the whole team was just not into it at the start, and I can't figure out why. It's the biggest game of your life. You should try to be ready. But, you know, as I say, maybe just the whole it's a weird atmosphere. It's nothing like a team goes through at any other point in the season, where you spend a week here at a, you know, place, a party place, and you know, you have your meetings in hotel rooms, and you don't. And I think Baltimore just did a better job preparing for the game, and we're better out of the box. And ultimately, that's why Baltimore won.
And Glenn Dickey, Colin Kaepernick, despite falling short, he had 307 yards in the air, 50-plus yards rushing, a touchdown run. He did throw one interception, which was a horrible throw. I'm not sure quite what happened on that one. But what was your take on what made the difference yesterday?
Well, I do think the Ravens were better. You know, emotionally, they were kind of riding the tide, you know, through the whole playoff. They didn't have a great season, but they really came to the fore in the playoffs, and they beat some great quarterbacks along the way. And so they were very confident going in, and I think, you know, they right through the first play of the second half, you know, when Jones returned that kickoff 180 yards. They were dominant, and then the power outage. I don't know whether it was that or whether the halftime that the 49ers came out more prepared despite that kickoff return. Those kickoff returns are always kind of flukes in a way. But they certainly were not into the game as much as the Ravens were.
Yeah. Mark Pretty, you were at the stadium when the lights mostly or partly went out. Describe what happened. How did that unfold?
Well, we're sitting there when Beyonce came on and did her halftime thing where half the stadium exploded, and then the kickoff return happened, and everybody was like, oh, well, 49ers, this is it for the 49ers. And then, they got the ball back, and they were moving out to the line of scrimmage to get ready for a play, and blink, the first half the lights went off, then about two-thirds of the lights went off, and everybody's kind of standing around and looked at the ceiling, and those of us from the Bay Area, of course, remembered last year's Monday night game when the lights went out at Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Steelers game. And there was a lot of joking about that. They must have the candlestick power system here.
Were reporters,
at least the 49ers were used to this and so forth.
Were reporters getting any information at that point about what was happening?
Well, we weren't getting any power. The power in the press box was off. Unfortunately, my laptop was on battery, so I could write. And we kept getting updates, but it was pretty comical because it was the classic, crossed fingers, there was a statement from the energy company, Entergy, it's called here, that said this was a problem inside the Superdome, and then the Superdome issued a statement saying, no, this was a problem outside from the power supplier. And then at the end of the game, there was a statement that basically said this occurred at the intersection of where the energy system met the Superdome system, which meant neither one of them were going to take the blame.
Yeah.
And then this morning, the commissioner, NFL commissioner Roger Goodell, because I'm assuming somebody got yelled at about this last night, said, well, we're still looking at it, but it would be wrong to assume that the Beyonce halftime show had anything to do with it. My theory, just, I guess I could, pull it out of the air, but also just kind of knowing what I know about electricity from my
high school class
or whatever. Yeah. I think that the halftime show took a lot of power and I think as they started unplugging all that stuff after halftime, we did get a statement that said that there was a big power fluctuation. And I think it was the halftime power sources were drawing a lot of juice.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
when they started unplugging that, something went
yeah.
haywire. That's
well,
my,
she,
that's
if she had lip synced, this never would have happened. But
we need an electrical engineer to call in and explain that to us.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to probably get any electrical engineers calling, but I do want to hear from fans, give folks a chance to give their impressions, maybe vent a little bit about their frustration. Or who knows, we may have some Ravens fans listening as well. 866-733-6786 is the number to call if you want to join us for this half hour. 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. We're talking with Glenn Dickey and Mark Pretty, two veteran sports writers, columnists here in the Bay Area. Of course, this was a lot of drama going into this, historic in the sense that two brothers were coaching opposing teams, the Bro Bowl, the Harbaugh, all kinds of names leading up to it. But after the game, Coach Jim Harbaugh of the 49ers, obviously very disappointed. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
I felt our guys battled. They competed. We got a spark, and we're going to look back after that. And I thought they did that. They battled back to get in it. And then, battled right on the brink of winning it. And it was a heck of a football game.
And Glenn Dickey, it was a heck of a football game. The last series that the 49ers played, they had the ball first and goal on the 7-yard line. And I think everyone, including the Ravens, thought, This is gonna be the 49ers comeback and win, and they just fell short. Those talk about that last four plays that the 49ers played in that with about 4 minutes left.
Well, I thought it was kind of strange because they didn't use the option, the read option as they call it. They didn't even use the threat of Kaepernick running with the ball, and of course he scored a touchdown. Their last touchdown was scored on his run. So, you know, the Ravens had to be aware of that, but they didn't use him. They didn't use Frank Gore. They just had him throwing three times. And each one to Crabtree and each one unsuccessful. So I don't know. To me, that was such a stereotype play. I mean, because Crabtree had been his favorite receiver all season. So, you know, I just thought the play calling was very strange down there at the end. And usually the 49ers are much more imaginative, much more creative, and all of a sudden they went back to, you know, their old playbook.
Yeah, Mark Purdy, what would you add to that? It was sort of a disappointing four plays and out.
Yeah, it was very odd. Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, is regarded as a very creative guy, had been all season, and these were like just very, I thought, vanilla plays that Glenn's right. No, they're not creative at all. I know they were talking to some of the offensive linemen last night. They had been blown away, the Ravens line, and at least a couple of the offensive linemen either told me or kind of with nods indicated to me that would have been nice. They really wanted to run the ball down there. They wanted to try to, you know, they ran a first down play. They were on the 7 yard line, and they ran the first down play and they gained 2 yards. Well, if they gained 2 yards on all the other three plays, they would have scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
And Frank Gore never touched the ball. He had been running very well. And then those other plays, look, you know, it reminded me of 49er fans from back in the day. Well, remember in the 81 Super Bowl, after the 81 season against Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Bengals had a first down inside the 10 like that. And the 49ers defense stopped them. And the one play to Crabtree on third down reminded me of almost the same play where the Bengals ran against the 49ers that time with Charles Alexander, and Dan Bunch came up and tackled Alexander, kept him out of the end zone. It was almost the same sort of play. And this time, though, the defender was right there, broke it up. It just I think that's the sequence, even though there were a lot of other places the 49ers made mistakes.
Yeah.
That's the sequence, I think, that people are going to walk away from, including, I think, guys on the team itself.
Yeah. Well, it's that's why they call it Monday morning quarterbacking, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones.
And the pleasure and the pain of falling.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's bring our listeners into this. David is on the line in San Francisco. David, welcome.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to add some depth to that. I say this as a Harbaugh fan. I mean, he got them to two championship games. I think he'll get them to many more. But in that last series, calling the timeout, first of all, running down the field and calling the timeout and blowing that timeout, which shows a hubris that we will indeed get into the end zone. They could have used that timeout if they didn't score. They would have gotten the ball back with a minute plus left. Then on the fourth down play, to call a play that is designed to pick up a holding or an interference call, I sort of agree with Phil Sims. That's not the way the referees are going to want to let the game go, is to give you a reload of first and goal from the one on a holding call on fourth down and goal.
Yeah, and Mark Purdy, although Jim Harbaugh was complaining very loudly that it should have been holding, it wasn't a great pass. And I think, you know, as the caller says, you know, the referee's only going to make that call if the receiver really had a shot at catching it. And it was overthrown, wasn't it?
But it was designed.
Well, that's not the ideal ball that Kaepernick throws. He doesn't throw that fade pass. That's not his best pass, his best technique on that pass. There were a few things about that play. One is they had another play called at the line of scrimmage. Kaepernick audibled to that play, we found out later in the locker room. And he audibled to it because he saw a certain coverage that he thought it would work against. I think the Ravens disguised that coverage because then when he did throw the ball, they were in position to make that play. And then the contact was made. And if you watch the replay, Crabtree kind of starts the contact with his hands, and then there's just a lot of shoving on both sides. I think, you know, you're right. You're not going to get that call on that play, and it's a risk to think you might. I think he audibled to it thinking Crabtree would be much more open, but it's a weird play because Crabtree is not the kind of receiver who jumps up. He's not that tall a guy. Randy Moss is kind of the guy who makes that sort of play. And so that play, you know, did deserve to be second-guessed. And Kaepernick was the one who audibled to it. You asked about him earlier. I think this is something he'll learn from. Maybe they should have stuck with the original play that was sent in. I still don't know what that was. As far as the timeout goes, Harbaugh called it because the clock was clock was running out.
Yeah.
And, you know, do you give up 5 yards to, you know, have the extra timeout? It's an interesting decision. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's given how close they were, I'm sure they didn't want to be any further back. And
Maybe, but it might open up the end zone more for you.
Yeah, no, that's true. David, thanks for the call. Let's go to Joe now in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. Good morning. Welcome.
I think some of the people haven't talked enough about and the difference of the game that I thought was a surprise was their inability to stop Anquan Boldin. That guy, I mean, the touchdown, that play where Flacco looked like he should have been sacked and then just sort of threw the ball up, sort of Hail Mary into the middle of the field. Boldin, and every big third down, it seemed like Boldin was there to come up and get a play that I thought that I didn't see him being that dominant a receiver that the Niner defense would really be that inability to stop him.
Well, and Glenn Dickey, Joe Flacco has been underrated or maybe underappreciated for much of the season, hasn't he? I mean, he really played an outstanding game yesterday.
Yes, he did not have a great season, but he's been great in the playoffs, and he was really great last night.
He was due to throw an interception, but he didn't. He went the whole postseason.
As far as Boldin goes, he's always been tough against the Niners. when he was with the Cardinals, he made some big catches against them. So he's that kind of receiver, and Flacco knew that. And I would disagree with the comment it was a Hail Mary pass. It wasn't a Hail Mary pass at all. He knew that when he threw it, that Boldin could go up and get that kind of ball. And the quarterback who works with the receiver during the season knows what his strengths are and what he can do, and he throws passes to that strength.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Flacco did.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call. We got a tweet here from Zenny who writes kind of an interesting point. 49ers secondary was horrible and special teams even worse. Emotion almost won, but it lost Super Bowl 47 for San Francisco. The 49ers lost because they were undisciplined from no suits when arriving in New Orleans to starting fights. Any thoughts about that, Mark Purdy? Was the team, was their head in the right place?
Wearing suits at it.
They were dressing like their coach.
They were. Well, the one thing about teams coached by coaches named Harbaugh is they like to come out and establish their physical superiority over the other team and be manly men. That's, the mighty men. That's the phrase they use. And that could lead to some very chippy stuff at the beginning of the game. And I'm sure the 49ers would say, well, the Ravens started it, and the Ravens would say the 49ers started it. But you do have to keep cooler heads. And there, as I say, that first half, if you're not really ready to play, I guess, you can try to act tough. But that wasn't what it was about. As far as the secondary goes, the 49er defense all year has been based on their front seven getting really good pressure against the quarterback. So he didn't have time to throw those kind of balls that the Flacco threw to Boldin. And keep the feet. That's how they beat Matt Ryan in the second half of that Atlanta game. They didn't always get to him, but they made him uncomfortable. He couldn't plant his feet. And the 49er front seven, for whatever reason yesterday, didn't get that push very often. I don't know if Justin Smith's injury, the lineman who had a torn triceps, if that was, bothering him or whatever. But if that front seven doesn't get the pressure on the quarterback, the 49er defensive backs are not the best defensive backs in the league. They're not horrible, but they need the help of that front seven so that they don't have to cover the receivers as long and the receivers don't have as much space to work. And Baltimore Ravens deserve credit for protecting the quarterback.
They only got to Flacco once and maybe got him out of the pocket a couple times. Let's go to back to the phones now. Again, the number 866-733-6786. And Steve in Mountain View, welcome.
Hi, thank you. So I'm going to try to be real brief, real fast, and then you guys can cover what you want. So one thing to me was the stupid penalties. If I were the coach, and I don't know if you could do this in the modern NFL with the egos, but in the very first preseason game, when somebody does a stupid penalty, it's third and long, and there's a stupid penalty, I would have that person after the game apologize to the rest of the team, explain why he did it and what the hell he was thinking and why he won't do it again. And I would set that tone. That's one thing. Another, clock management. There were a couple times they got up to the line. There was like 4 seconds left. That drives me nuts.
Yeah.
That takes me back to the Singletary era, and I don't, with a Harbaugh team, that really surprises me.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, one thing it did bring up, and Mark or Glenn weigh in on this, is there were some distractions going into the Super Bowl. The anti-gay comments, Randy Moss saying he was better than Jerry Rice. I mean, does that stuff, the atmospherics, does that say anything about the team's preparation or how focused they are going into a game? Mark?
Well, I think it all says something. I'm just not quite sure what it says. You know, those guys are briefed about what it's going to be like. You're going to be in a room for an hour every day, basically, or 45 minutes every day with a bunch of reporters who are going to ask all kinds of questions about a lot of things. So shame on them if they weren't prepared for those kind of questions. Randy Moss, I have no idea why he decided to go off and make a unilateral declaration that he was the best receiver ever on a team, for a franchise that had Jerry Rice, who was the best receiver ever. But it shows you when guys open mouth. Now, how does that play out on the field? I don't know. I suppose the Ravens defensive backs were chirping at Moss about it. I don't know. I guess you could say if they were thinking more about what they were saying rather than how they were going to play, that would be a distraction. I do think Jim Harbaugh was bothered during the week because he's a control freak, and he wasn't comfortable with, you know, the NFL saying, well, now we know you like to do this, but you got to do this.
Yeah,
wasn't just the media stuff. It's the way you can have your meetings and the transport to the practices and so forth. So I don't know.
Well, you know,
when you lose, you know, what's the Glenn knows the saying, what? Death has a thousand, losing has a thousand fathers, or
success has a thousand mothers.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. Well, let's look forward. We got a couple minutes left here. Glenn Dickey, let's look forward, back and forward. Very controversial decision this year to replace Alex Smith with Kaepernick. Anything? Does this game just totally vindicate Jim Harbaugh? And what happens to Alex Smith going forward?
Well, first place, I have to say that I was very much against a decision that was made at the time because I thought Alex Smith was playing very well before he got the concussion. But I do think that in the long run that Harbaugh made the right decision, and Kaepernick will learn from what he... I think Alex Smith would have played a much smoother game last night. Whether that would have won for the 49ers is open to question. But
or whether he would have gotten them there at all.
Yeah, right. And I do think Alex definitely will move on. Whether they'll trade him, I think they'll try to trade him and get something for him. Much like they did with Montana. You know, in 1993.
Yeah, when they sent him to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Mark Purdy, I'm sorry, Glenn, we're real short on time here. We've got just a few seconds left. Mark Purdy, final thoughts about that? The future of the team, this is a very young team with a very bright future, isn't it?
And the organization's in place to draft more good players. They've had a couple clinkers, but they seem to know how to put together a team with the right elements. I think they're going to be playoff contenders and Super Bowl contenders for foreseeable future.
And then just quickly, biggest need in the draft?
Oh, well, how about those defensive backs we mentioned?
Yeah, shore up the secondary. All right, Mark Purdy from New Orleans this morning, thank you so much for being here. Glenn Dickey, thanks to you as well. Well, coming up in the second half of this hour, we're going to talk marijuana. A big case coming up tomorrow before the state Supreme Court having to do with cannabis dispensaries and how much regulation local governments can or cannot do. We'll be joined by reporter Michael Montgomery, who's been covering that issue. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us.